follows, but I guess we'll go right ahead. Where is Gordon Allen?
He's the only one missing.
Carl, well, fine.
How are you, last name?
Sorry, no, Carl.
What's Fred's name?
How are you, my name?
Where are you?
Can I do that?
I gotta guess, I guess if I handicap up at 20.
Senator Allen is on his way.
Yeah, I have.
We going down tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
Oh, how are you?
Good to see you, Mr. President.
Hello.
We got quite a good president.
Hello, Jack.
How are you, my friend?
President, come on.
Sit down, sit down.
I was gonna have you in the office, but this is 11, I'm just gonna go to the crowd.
Here, Barry, you just sit at the right.
And you?
Yes, mine.
I always put the water on the right.
The one thing you can get.
I don't know whether you like it, this is the chair of the Secretary of State, so that's all right. Tower's on the left, that's where you belong.
Right, no, that's all right, sir.
Later.
want to start, or who's the, because should we turn it to Barry first, when I can take off?
I have got any agendas, you can see. I thought it would be very helpful, Mr. President, since you have any critical votes coming up in the national security and foreign affairs people, and since you have in this room, as you've indicated, a good portion of those who stand rock solid behind you on critical national security issues, such as end of war resolutions and war presidential limitation of powers and proposals, ABM only 12 resolutions, and tough defense budget questions that are coming up. It's going to be critically important for us to build from this base of support, and there are a larger number of Republicans who support these things that are so critical to national security and national defense.
That means I can't let it kick off yet. I'm on that committee. I'm going to testify Friday, thank you, opposing the legislation that's been introduced by Javits and Fulbright and Cooper Church that would in effect turn the war decisions over to Congress. I'm the only member of the Republican Party that's so far agreed to testify. They can't get the State Department to testify. They can't get the Defense Department to testify. And gentlemen, when you read the brief I put together, I think it will scare the living daylights out of you to even think that just
so they can't get a statement.
They can't get an answer from the State Department. This is the last.
Damn well.
That's right. And the legislation is. I'm not going to get into it.
It's the Javits and Hoover.
It's the Javits bill, and Cooper Church, and all of these pieces of legislation that will in effect say change the constitutional powers of the president as the only person who can go to war in this country.
What is it? Is it a Senate resolution or is it a House or what kind of thing?
It's a Senate resolution and it's a Senate bill.
Sent to the senators of the bill.
Only the Congress can declare war, can go to war, can regulate the war, and it even gets into the strategic decisions involving war. And as you know, we now in the Armed Services Committee have been instructed to set the force levels. Now, I'm going to testify against that.
When is the hearing again?
I think they started the hearing today.
What committee?
One of the rights.
One of the rights.
Oh, and this, you get your legal arsenal, you run this one down, and it's a scary one. Now, if I might say something, if I've written to you about this, and I made one public speech, unfortunately, both you and the Vice President spoke the same night, and I was lucky to get on the society page. But
somebody read you.
I think that what has to be done to get the American people back on your side in this whole matter of war, or let's say preparedness, is to let's take the threat briefings and downgrade them as far as you can and let the American people see that we are number two. We are no longer number one. I listened to Patrick's speech out in San Francisco. She said, we're going to spend less on defense. We're going to do more negotiating. And I wrote him a letter and I said, well, poker player, how do you negotiate when you're second best? So I'm going to have lunch with you tomorrow. And I mean it, Mr. President, I would not want to be in this White House the day the American people wake up the fact that, by God, we are number one. And they have the ability for the first strike. They have the ability to prevent our second strike. They're all producing this in every damn weapon system we have, including the heavy bomber now. And I just think that you have to give serious consideration to doing this. If you don't, let's do all stuff this afternoon in an editorial and go long ways. I'm going to go a little longer each time because I think the American people have to know it, all the proxmires and the Javitses of this Congress is going to prevail.
But let me begin with a couple of points you put in order. I think it will set the stage. The issue that appears to be the most difficult is really the simplest. The simplest minds politically is the one that would be very much
say that on that particular issue, the die is cast. I mean, the Senate can pass 18 resolutions, but that, we have a goal. We are achieving that goal. We will achieve the goal. In order to achieve it, it must not be indicated, except if we go along how and when and where we will do certain things. And next October 15th, I make another announcement, and I'll make others before that, probably related to other factors and subject why you will see where we're going. But the big problem the country has to face then is what do we do after that? Where do we go? What should be the posture of the United States after Vietnam is over? And once Vietnam is over, there, and already it begins, there is the idea, well, cut back defense, cut back defense posture in various parts of the world, Europe, Asia, et cetera, and so on down the line. It has to do with, when you get individual weapon systems like EDM, that's a real tough one for some. When you get into that, as far as we're concerned, it relates to that too, because right at the present time, we are conducting some very serious negotiations with the Russians. Let me say that the stupidest thing we could do would be to agree to an EDM only agreement, limiting that, because EDM is the only system that we're building that they want to stop. Just look at the numbers for a moment. And I would be quite as bearish as you are, Barry, because we can look at some of the plus things. We're still ahead of conventional CNR. Conventional. I'm not talking about nuclear. I mean, in terms of aircraft carriers, et cetera.
We don't need aircraft carriers.
I know, but we're ahead of whatever. We're still ahead in air in bombers, right? To the extent
they're making
them. We're still ahead.
We're ahead.
There's two. But the air
knows in total, no. You take their medium range bomber, plus their long range bomber. We have no medium-range bombers. They're ahead of us.
But now the areas that should be a great concern to us, when we look at nuclear punch, they're in rough terms, without going over the numbers, they're all public now. They have approximately 1,500 long-range missiles, and we have 1,000. We have not had any new ones since 1957. More important in terms of the throw weight, in other words, the warhead that they have, they are three times as strong as we are, because their 1,500 are big ones, for the most part, or at least they have more. We don't have anything like a 15 megaton deal. They have several. They're as nines. So the throw weight is more. So, and in terms of nuclear submarines, as you know, the projections are that by 1970, late 73, early 74, 75, they will catch us and so forth. Now, when we look at that situation, then the United States has to consider where we are going to be, where we're going to be in the world after Vietnam. And we will have ended the American involvement in Vietnam. We will have ended in the way of the South Vietnamese. Will not be guaranteed, but at least we'll have a chance to survive. That's all. And as a result of that, places like Thailand, Indonesia, the Philippines, for that matter, all the way up to Korea, and not only even, and most important, Japan, will have more confidence in the United States than they would have if we were to leave Vietnam in a way that gave us some quick relief and then a communist takeover in a matter of weeks or months, which would be inevitable if we didn't walk. let us concede that either the man sitting in this chair or the man sitting around the table like this in Moscow is going to be insane enough to launch a war which may result in the destruction of 50 to 70 million of his own people. Let's concede that. The critical point we have to have in mind is this. Look ahead. Look ahead 3 to 4 years, whoever's here, 5 years. United States of America, here's the Soviet Union. And then it is known all over the world that the United States is the second strongest nation in the world. All right. It doesn't bother us. We're not jingoistic. We don't have to be number one. So, whether it's SST or anything else, the hell with it. We've given up the lead steel. We've given it up in terms of our radios and a lot of other things. And so, what difference does it make? Just so we got enough. Well, suppose it doesn't matter to us. Maybe it doesn't matter to the Latin Americans. Maybe it doesn't matter to the Africans, because they are continents that aren't going to have significant effect on the balance of power in the world. The Latin Americans may be 25 years, the Africans 100 or 200 years. But let's look at the two key great peoples of Europe and Asia. Who are they? Well, in Europe, it's the Germans. Not that the British aren't great and haven't been, not that the French aren't, the Italians once were and may once again be, and the Spanish may come along in 15 or 20 years. There's people to watch. But the Germans, 25 years after World War II, are the most creative, dynamic, and frustrated people in the world, in that part of the world. As far as the Germans are concerned, they have economic ties with the West, they're in NATO, they don't like the Russians, and they don't like communism. But on the other hand, put yourself in the position of the Germans. And if the Germans once lose confidence in the American nuclear umbrella, and they have facing them not only the Soviet Union, but the enticement of East Germany as well, watch out. That's the problem you've got. Now let's look to Asia a moment. We look all over Asia. Ending the Vietnam War in the right way is going to simply hold our position there, so that the 300 million people that live on the rimland of communist Asia, communist China, North Korea, communist North Vietnam, so that those people who incidentally produce three times as much as those who live in communist Asia will still opt for staying on communism. Let's look at the Japanese. Without question, the most creative, dynamic, and again, frustrated people. Because you see, what is common about the Japanese and the Germans is quite interesting. Both lost the war. Both are therefore denied nuclear capability. Both therefore can be economic giants, which they are. Japan's now number 3, West Germany's number 4. And both have to depend upon somebody else for their defense and receiving greeting for their place in the sun. Now watch the Japanese, and they perhaps are even a greater problem than the Germans, because the Germans, at least, sit there in the heartland of Europe. And they've got all of their location, their fighting with the French, the British, the rest, and the non-American. But once the Japanese, sitting up there, 110 billion, producing 2.5 times as much as 800 million Chinese now, once they become convinced that the American nuclear umbrella is not significant, is not enough, or that we're number 2, that's really what it gets down to, then, despite all of the ties and trade, which some people think is enough, despite all of the other reasons they have to be with us, despite the fact that they do better if they're a non-communist system than a communist system, I don't mean they're even communist, where the hell are they going to look? They got to make their deal. That's the problem that you have in the world. Now we come to America. And here I am in a very great minority, probably maybe even in this room. But I believe at the present time, well, if you were to go out and poll the American people, a majority would say, cut defense. A majority would say, don't build the ABM. A majority would say, bring all 5 divisions from Europe, or what the hell we have, or at least half of what we've got. A majority would say that we don't want to play a role in the world. that we have given up that position. What it would do to this country is something we would not like to see. Now, what we have got to do, and here's where you fellows, it seems to me, have to be kind of like statesmen. I pointed out this morning at the leaders' meeting, because there were a few there that were around. Anybody, was anybody in the, Carl, were you in the Congress at the time of the draft vote in World War II? Remember that vote? And, well, it was a tunnel. Most Republicans, and I know how I felt, I would have voted that way, I've been there, they voted against the extension of the draft, and failed to carry the one vote. Turned out, for a variety of reasons, that proved to be a pretty difficult vote for those guys. The point that I made is this. At the present time, whatever the public position may be, we have to realize that, and that's why I have to take this strong position, that's why I have to take this leadership position on this. We have to realize that we are, frankly, at a watershed period. We're either going to determine whether the United States is going to accept the position of being the second strongest nation in the world, or whether we are going to give this present administration, which may turn out to be the last administration that gives one tinker's damn about American strength, whether this present administration is at least going to have the cards to play in the negotiations with the Russians that will enable us to put, really, a ceiling, and that's all that we're really talking about, a ceiling on this continued growth. I mean, this continued risk. Because let me tell you this, when you talk about an 80 and only agreement, it's two for them and one for us. Something they already got, something that we're building, something that they want us to build. And so the race goes on, and they continue to escalate their building of offensive missiles, and their advantage will increase by geometrical terms. Now that's the thing. Now Henry, I call you in to see if you want to add in that, because here's a group of folks that have fought some lonely battles up there, and they want to know maybe whether they're right. States, if you're going to have, if you're going to have negotiation, if you're going to have negotiation, and as you know, we are going forward to solve negotiations on a private basis. We have. If you're going to have a chance for negotiation, you cannot give the game away in the Senate. That's really what you get down to. See, if you give away the game in the Senate, you throw the cards away. What the hell reason is the Soviets got to negotiate with us? Is that really it? Let me say, we do have some private channels and talks and so forth and so on. And I've been at Bill Rogers here, we say the same thing. He knows this. Mel Larry knows this. But the point is that right now, it's at a critical time. If they see us bugging out of this thing, that's the real problem we've got. Now, we're not asking you to go up the hill, you know, right now. This is going to come next week, thank God, or next month, so I understand, or the next, perhaps, I don't know what they think. Your vertical on ABM.
I have no idea.
I think it's, well, they told me that they told us, what did they say, 2 or 3 months?
Yes, sir.
No, that's not 2 months.
And no,
well, just do your best. Yeah, but my point is that if we take it away, then you can forget. Now here's the real problem. You forget the chances for an agreement. They have strong reasons to have an agreement. That had no relationship to their desire, Barry, to have a first strike. They have reasons to have an agreement because they're concerned, naturally they're concerned about China. They're concerned about the future. They take the long book, which we often do not. So they see the Chinese problem. And they see their own problems. They see the German problem and so forth. They need our assistance. Maybe we can't. We don't know. Maybe they will want a deal. Maybe they will not. But right now, we're going to find out if they don't want a deal. If they do want a deal, we've got to have the cards. If they don't, if they decide no, they're not going to do it, then the United States, and here I'll have to take the responsibility, and then hopefully we'll have a few people following. And the United States has got to make a decision. Are we going to stand by and allow the Soviet Union to have what the world will know, what the world does not know, and unquestioned advantage? Barry spoke about it. The British Institute of Strategic Studies has already talked about it, and so far down the line. But isn't that really the subject to Henry that we're really at? I found it a critical point, and that's why the reason we got you both together, I just wanted to tell you that we know it's hard, but the way you stood up, that you fought this battle, right now it's terribly important to the country that we fought. And if we, that, it's a battle. I'm just thinking, I'm not averse to thinking politically that, if you don't mind, Bob. But the point is that in terms of the country, and in terms of politics, I mean, let me say, this is a turn. And those people who are out there on the other side, and who are all unilateral disarmament and so forth, and the U.S. don't give one damn about what position we are. Right now, I agree. They may have the way when it works that way. Frustration about the war, but let's look ahead again. The war is over, and we're no longer having contenders, and the United States is doing pretty good. So here we sit in the world. We look, and here you see the Germans, and here you see the Japanese, and here you see the Soviet, and here you see China 15 years from now. And here's America. Where are we going to be? Well, then you might have a very different game. That's really what you come down to. And I think what we're really saying for you here is that I'm really trying to put it in perspective. The war, a terrible issue, divides, you've stood up, and we know everybody's against it. We're doing our very best, but we're going to do it responsibly. As I said to frankly to the Democratic League, if you can have one commander-in-chief, a woman. I want to be the commander-in-chief. That's my job. But if the Congress takes it over, then it takes the responsibility for what happens. And that's the difference.
Mr. President, the essential message then is this, and it's what
minority leader here. Now, this is a guy that's in Congress, but this is to be very interesting. The Germans are going through a hell of a problem, our day to day. They're frustrated.
Not the details of the agreements or what's worked out in Berlin is something we shall see, but the Germans, this is not, would you not agree? I just said a moment, they're the most dynamic, the most creative, and the most frustrated people in Germany.
The Germans have a terrible problem. They opted for the West. And now this is every year at this conference when they leading Germans participate. Same time, Eastern Germany is Soviet puppet state, so they're torn between their Western orientation, their desires for national unity, to the degree that the West starts, that the spirit of accommodation develops in the West. Syria starts with Germany about whether they made the right choice to begin with, and they begin playing release. That in turn frightens all the other West European countries who are afraid of the revival of a nationalist German policy, and then starts a vicious circle in which every country starts racing for Moscow. We've heard it argued that a good case can be made for the proposition that one reason the French have opposed us so much in the Middle East is because when the Germans started moving towards Moscow last year, government, that they wanted to prove to Moscow that they could deliver something to and make themselves desirable. Now, if the Germans, on top of it, get the effect, Germans believe throughout the post-war period that their security depended entirely on American nuclear power. If the Germans had kept the impression that our nuclear power was no longer preeminent, that coupled with their national frustration would create the most extraordinary shifts. This is not a stable. They've had three revolutions in the space of 30 years, two inflations, two lost wars, and as the president pointed out, if Germany switched, or if Germany only, if it didn't switch, started operating on its own on a purely national basis in the center of Europe, that alone could wreck all the achievements of post-war American policy in Europe.
Yeah.
Well, can
I ask you?
Just frankly getting concerns. You don't have to worry about this group or its conditions as far as supporting your position on the defense needs of this country. But we have to have some weapons, Mr. President. We got our ass knocked off on the SSC by telling the truth. And they won because they told outright lies. Now, they've already started on your defense system with outright, bolder lies they even told on the SSD. This is why I've asked you to take the CIA threat briefing, the Defense Intelligence Agency threat briefing, the SPAC threat briefing, and as far as you can, downgrade the classification so the American people are no longer fooled. So that you can say to a proxmire publicly on the floor of the Senate, now, Mr. Senator, that's a lie. Here is the truth. We can't do that. We can say everything that Henry's been talking about. We know these things to be true, but we can't back them up. And you say that they're talking about the different aspects of the military strength. The average age of our naval vessel is 23 years, and we retire them at 25. The average age of the Russian vessel is under 10 years, and they're building vessels faster than we are. We took 300 ships out of the fleet last year. The old theory of the Straits is beginning to pop up, and we begin to see it viable. Why are the Soviets interested in the Middle East? The Suez Canal, the Mediterranean, Gibraltar, and that no longer becomes an American lake. It becomes a destruction of the southern
territories. The idea that the Soviets are
innocent. We go out into the Indian Ocean. We have no vessels in the Indian Ocean outside of a handful of old destroyers. The British have one small outpost, and we have one small piece of real estate that attracts us. So the Indian Ocean, to me, is one of the great keys to world dominance in
for economics.
Once they take the Straits of Malacca and our Russian submarines all over the Indian Ocean, this isn't information you have to go to the CIA to get. You only have to pick up newspapers and magazines to determine this. They're patrolling the Pacific shores almost around the perimeter. And my plea, Mr. President, is that we have got to have some weapons. We've got to be able to stand on the floor of that Senate and tell the things that we see that I've been saying in these briefings year after year after year.
It's classified.
It's just classified top secret for one reason. Our photography is better than theirs. And we don't want them to
know. Not a very good reason.
Hell, it is.
Our
expression.
No, it's a good reason for classification.
I won't take long. I want to say two things. The first one is very simple and direct. And the second isn't quite that simple. The first is on this business of ABMs only, on the resolution that's pending in the Senate. It seems to me an extraordinarily good argument could be made for a resolution that said ICBMs only. Because the very nature of things, an ABM is physically incapable of injuring someone beyond the boundaries of your own country. Our ABMs constitute no threat to Russia. Their ABMs constitute no threat to us. I would hope that at some future point in history, we can reach the place where we must stabilize world affairs by having unlimited defense, but having a severe limitation by treaty, by agreement, and also by ABMs on the one thing that can't buy out the other seriously. Now, that's the first point.
ICBMs only.
The way I package is, ICBMs are immoral, ABMs are moral, because they don't constitute a threat.
I suppose the problem you have there is murder.
Well, you see, our ABMs, speaking of the humanity of this room, our ABMs are so designed, and our warheads are so constructed, we're going to test our first one of them checked out before long. So that murderers within a certain range would be subjected to the same X-radiation bombardment Spartan missile that the others would. Unless you go beyond our present murdering, you're not likely to avoid the effects that are already in. But the second point, Mr. President, is a little more complex. I can say a pretty short time. I think every one of us would agree that your responsibility and our responsibility is the long-term future survival of the United States. I am terrified that what you say is right, that this may be the latest administration that really gives a damn about whether or not America is number one. That really tears me up, and I think you're right. I think, however, that we've got to look at low road for a moment. We've got to realize that something's brawl in the land, that the beast is out of the cage, and if we're not careful, we'll devour us. And that beast simply consists of the fact that this country, whether right or wrong, is just sick to death of this war.
That's right. That's right.
And Mr. President, I am not being disloyal to the country nor to you when I say, in brief, that speaking of the people as the sovereign, you can doubt the sovereign's judgment, but you can't doubt the sovereign's story.
That's right.
And they're, by God, going to end this war if it kills us all. Everybody in this room can perish politically, and it won't make a bit of difference. This country wants that war ended. Now, 6 months ago, I thought we had preempted the field, and the issue was over, and my only concern was that we've done it too fast. It might have frittered away a point that you and I will use in our campaigns in 72. But now I'm convinced that, without arguing the morality and the rightness of it, that that's not true. The beast is back out of the cage again. And I give you this note of despair without a corresponding suggestion. I don't have except, Mr. President, I have to say, in deference and respect to you and the presidency, I have to say that my very best judgment, my sense is, for whatever the words the politicians say, that this war has to be ended quick. Otherwise, we're all going to perish. And if we lose this war, if we lose this challenge for the country, we'll never have a chance to defend the long-term future of this country. Include our posture in 10 or 15 years vis-a-vis Berlin, China, Japan, ABM, ICBM is worth a hell of a lot more to me than the question of how long or how short this war will be. I've never said that before to a living soul, but I felt obliged to say it to you now.
Well, I can only assure you that
where you should say, I hear you and I understand you. But you never would say agree with me.
No, I agree with your political assessment. But in terms of business, I can just show you that I'm not going to get my answer, except to say that I'm keenly aware of the problem.
I would expect you would not. And I would expect you wouldn't have to give him the idea of setting a date. But I hope you let me have
that. That would militate it.
That would tear up all that strikes. That would tear up the whole thing. But permit me the last luxury of saying that my imperfect best judgment, we've got to have the people of the United States convinced that war is over by this fall.
So next fall.
No, by this fall.
No, he's talking about two different things. He's talking about
convincing them that it's over.
That's right.
And we had them convinced once and they got it.
Convinced that it's over, but in terms of, and you're saying that it'd be over.
Well, there are two different
things. You're talking about the same.
You did it once. You had them convinced that it's over.
You're
lying out of the cage.
Mr. President, can I argue this a bit of that?
It was one thing I did before I came up here. It was to ask the caucus what reaction you're getting on Vietnam. I don't think there's been any states that supported you more on war in Vietnam than say Florida. I'm not hawkish. I mean, I'm not dovish. I'm not left-wing. But right now, we're getting a heavy flow, which is beginning in Vietnam. There's a good sign this has happened. And the theme of every letter is out now by December 31st, 1971. And in big fat letters here, this is not left-wing that generated mail. This is coming from ordinary citizens, people that probably supported you all out of it.
Right.
Even just a few weeks ago.
It's coming from county chairman.
That's right. I had dinner last week with the editor and publisher of the paper that supported you most of all of us. In fact, I don't think they've ever said a critical word yet to come out of something. His word said was this, because you get to see the president anytime soon. Tell him he's got to get out of that war now, right now, or he's down the drain. I just want to echo what
I know that if you would have to, that get for the rest of you to stand up, you have an extremely difficult. I can just assure you that to get a few plans.
Oh, I wasn't talking from that point.
I don't
talk about what that is.
No, what I meant is that I
were
Mr. Prescott.
I'd like to add a word, a little rant, a local one, Howard, instead. And I agree with him 100%. Because this war has eroded our country and our spirit and our heart about everything. But I believe when we get this war, out of this war, that with nobody in this country, I say the great majority anyway, don't want to stand by and see us be a number two country. I believe in every community and every, wherever we go in our little talks, when we talk about the security of our nation and its preeminence in the world, that the people support that. They have eroded in their concepts by this war.
It becomes preeminent.
That's the big thing. I don't think there'd be any trouble on the ICBMs, the SST, or any of these other things to keep us in a lead position when we get out of this war.
Well, I guess this was a pleasure to
be here. I think it was, absolutely.
Yes.
And as far as the future's concerned, and your handling of the situation and getting us out of the war, I think is responsible. I'm happy and proud to support that position. It makes sense. I just hope it goes fast.
Mr. President, first, I'd like to have any comment on the relationship of our nerves to the balance of nuclear power. But before getting there, I'd like to get a couple of things off my chest. Now, with all deference to my friend Howard, I don't think that at least I'm not ready to respond to get out now or get out by December 31st. I am concerned, and I wish there'd be some way that maybe Herb Klein could help on this. I mean, he kept the Gallup and other polls to ask the question, such as, do you think we should be out of Vietnam by December 31st? And then the next
what the fate of our prisoners of war is and really put it up to them. I doubt very much that it doesn't get done.
Yes.
Well, I haven't seen it.
But I have one. But it's 5-1 against abandoning the prisoners, 2-1 against getting out under conditions of leaving the communist table, but that's the fault of Bob Holland.
Why don't you, what is that?
Well, that's one I published, right?
No, the Wire Citizen.
It hasn't been published.
Yeah, but, why, but why can't we get the Gallup poll to do the job?
The Lower C is the same thing.
Well,
research.
Well, I know. The people out of my state, they look at that Gallup poll. It says Gallup poll asked this question. It'll carry a lot more weight, at least in my state. But I feel this one.
You got that, why don't you send it around? I saw something on that. Those two questions are right.
See, we get letters from people closing a copy of the Gallup poll. 85% or 80% think we should be out by December 31st. Well, this is not a
responsible question. Now, sir, let's say, let's go ahead now.
Well,
we would like to be out now.
But I think that while the announcement of troop withdrawals and all of that may appeal to those of us in this room, the average person on the street, now in my state, I don't think that that has the appeal. And what they're really yearning for is something that will give them a feeling that there is light at the end of the tunnel. Now, the fixed state proposal does have an attraction to it. That's for this reason that I introduced my resolution, which I'm going to testify on tomorrow before the Commission Committee. And that says that within 12 months after the completion of exchange of prisoners of war, all American military personnel will be out. I had the day after I made that, introduced that resolution, I spoke up at Iowa State University on the campus. And you've got a lot of eggheads up there and a lot of, there may be Republicans, this is a Republican dinner, but there were some Democrats there, and by and large, that is what you would call the faculty-type Republican group. And they gave me a rising ovation on that proposition. Why? They want the prisoners of war back, and they also realize that we can't abandon them, but they want to see that light at the end of the tunnel, and that 12-month deal shows it to them. Now, I hope you'll think about this, because I have very good reaction from around the state. I have letters from other states on it. Didn't get any place a little pressure, but it's something I was trying to give them the feeling that there is light at the end of the tunnel. Put the onus on North Vietnam to get going on the exchange of prisoners of war under your terms, which were, you put it, the most generous ever offered in the war. And there is an incentive there. Number one concern, nationally at least, is our prisoners. Number two, we'd like to see Vietnamization succeed. From all I know about it, I think that 12-month timetable in there would allow it to succeed. And on the other hand, the North Vietnamese number one deal is for us to get out of it. So there you have a basis for perhaps a getting going. And the very least it does is to fight this end-of-war amendment stuff with a fixed statement. Now, I realize that if we become second best, that there are the problems of our national security and problems of international relations and problems of economics, but I think I probably think the same way you do on this. What I'm most concerned about is the character of the American people. But there's an inconsistency here. When Henry talks about preeminence, we have the sufficiency doctrine that has come along. Now, Laird talked about sufficiency. That's quite a bit different from preeminence. And I'm not sure that there is a consistency between sufficiency and what we've been talking about. Here is a problem. Up until rather recently, we thought about the United States being number one. Now we're talking in terms of sufficiency, whatever that means. I agree thoroughly with Barry's suggestion to declassify certain things and give the hard facts of life to the American people. President Kennedy did that one time when he was announcing, or when he came up with an announcement about the decision to stop testing in the Alps. I heard him on the radio when I was driving out in Iowa. He declassified the information he gave the American people. The reaction was very good. So I hope you would try to follow Barry's suggestion on it, give the people the hard facts of life, and relay it
the sufficiency concept.
Question, really, is there, Jack, is, if the two problems in regard to that is scaring American people, scaring our allies, and looking too weak for the Russians, so we have to do this in a way that we combine it with a program. You don't scare people unless you're prepared to do something about it.
And I know the reaction of some of our colleagues over there, but now Laird came out with his announcement, right, so they were trying to scare us to death. It's a matter of tactics and subtlety and nuance, how you get the word across, but something that will give us a chance to go to the people or to say out there in the Senate floor, you're wrong, Mr. Proxmire, you're dead wrong. Here are the facts. We don't have this
Well, it's pretty mean that you run over to the public, giving everybody a chance to talk here, but let me say that I do appreciate your coming down, and we're trying to get you some pretty good things. I'll talk about it.
Mr. President, you have already once that few times. Seems to me to be a major accomplishment of the administration.
Go out.
The relaxing trade restrictions in China and some of the other things that you're getting there.
Sure.
I don't want to delay, but just one more suggestion, and it doesn't have to be fresh out and deep in the sea. Seems to me, in a political war, it's like any other kind of war, we don't want our lines stretched too far. It looks like to me it's very much more important to stand up together. At least vaguely related to defense, foreign policy, and everything else. And it may be how to accomplish it and how to deal with the public disposing of that. No. I feel that there are a few domestic issues. Yes. More or less a man. But we're stretching ourselves too far. Now, for instance, I'm convinced we need executive reorganization. That's the answer. I'm also convinced that this Congress not going to give us. Now, here's a little bit, but the rural people kind of feel the Department of Agriculture is going to take away from them. So here's something they've had for 100 years. We're going to celebrate the 100th anniversary of J.C.R.E. Morton, which we've done for the first century of
agriculture.
And yeah, and it's, now I can live with it because I don't think they're not going to pass it. But it just seems to me that if we could narrow our lines where we have to stand up and pick our battle, which is a little easier. And I don't know how, and I shouldn't have conjectured this late because we should talk about some later time. I said that's one example, but I think it's something more to think.
You've seen the department.
Well, the department is, yeah. Well, I appreciate all of you coming down. As I say, obviously, even in a group like this, I can't talk quite as candidly as I would like to. But you can be pretty confident about what's going to happen.
And leave you with one other terrifying little thought.
Sure.
China is making big aircrafts. They made 300 last year.
Manufacturing.
Right. We used to sit around a year ago and say China has no air capacity. China
had a plane of their own.
At this rate, China in 5 years will have a bigger air force than the United States unless we get off our hands. Now I have the problem of the Harmon Trophy, sir. You win it. No, I didn't win it, but nobody, the president and the vice president all did it, and nobody would answer the question last year, so it wasn't presented. This year, they can't get you or the vice president to say you'll give it, and it's the most important trophy in aviation, and men like Jimmy Doolittle